Welcome to Knock Talk, North of Center's podcast about the challenges of leading in a world that operates at the speed of scent. During this episode, Knock CEO Cliff W. Gilmore and Knock COO BJ Fitzpatrick Jr. will discuss the communication-based leadership principle of timeliness and the benefits of prioritizing timeliness over speed to avoid a rush to failure. Hey, good morning. You're talking to Cliff W. Gilmore and BJ Fitzpatrick, the the CEO and COO of North of Center. North of Center is a coaching and consulting firm that, it helps people navigate a world that operates at the speed of scent. And we do this using what we call the communication-based leadership framework. And that framework includes 23 elements, which is just a huge number. That's too much. So we break it down into four enduring truths that people can use as cornerstones on which to build their own leadership foundation, their own leadership philosophy. We have four characteristics of CBL as a process that people can use to guide them from A to Z throughout pretty much any of their activities, no matter what their business is. And then there are nine guiding principles of communication-based leadership. And balancing those principles, we have proven over time, will get folks to where they want to be when it comes to good prioritization, good decision-making, and ethical prioritization and decision-making. And then the final six elements are six essential questions. And we teach folks to cycle through those very six basic questions over and over and over to make sure that they always understand what issues they're dealing with, who they're trying to communicate with, and what their outcome is, so that they can come up with the right strategies to engage and really achieve the goals that they want to achieve. But for today, we're going to focus on one of the principles. There's 23 elements out there. Nine of those are principles. We're just going to take a look at one. What we want to look at is timeliness. And timeliness is our first choice because, as I mentioned, we're working today in a world that operates at the speed of send. I mean, it's just the world is fast. It's everywhere. It's on the move. Change is the status quo. And that gets us sometimes caught in this trap of having to move fast, everything being about speed. And one of our key messages when it comes to the principle of timeliness is it's okay to just slow down. Just slow down. So when it comes to the principles, we have something to keep in mind is that each of those principles has two aspects to it. It's the words and the deeds. I mean, everything we do communicates something to somebody somewhere. But I'm seeing BJ flash finger up in the air at me here, and I want to know what he has to say. What's on his mind?
Well, one of the things I wanted to say, Cliff, is you and I, of course, we talk all the time as a part of the business, plus the fact I think we enjoy it. And we've worked together before. And a lot of our, when we kind of go off subject and start talking about CBL between you and I, whether we're talking about what we've done in the past or what we're working on right now and looking at the what's in the news today, so often timeliness comes up because you and I have experienced it ourselves. And it's where we start almost every time. Was this fast? Was it slow? Did it have to be that fast? What did they, of the nine principles, what did they have to sacrifice to achieve this matter of speed or this being a little slower with their message? So I think it just made sense that you and I start with timeliness because that's where we are so much of the time.
No, and you hit a key point there. You know, we're tying together timeliness and speed. And when it comes to developing a communication-based leadership mindset, developing a mindset that will help leaders function in this world that's moving so fast, it's important to start with the things that will guide you and that allow alternatives and allow other possibilities and potential. So if you're operating under a precept of speed, if you're constantly thinking, I got to go fast, got to go fast, got to go fast, that's what you're going to do. And it doesn't allow you an opportunity to slow down. Now, if you think in terms of timeliness of when you're going to speak and when you're going to act, that allows you the choice of moving slow or fast. So if you get timeliness into your mindset and you're thinking in terms of what's the right time to talk or act, rather than automatically and reflexively thinking in terms of speed, in terms of, you know, I've got to be first. I've got to be first, whether it's in journalism, first with the headline, first with the story, first with, I've got to make sure my boss hears something first from me. If you just slow down, take a breath and ask yourself, what's the right timely response to this? What's the right thing to do in terms of timeliness and timing? That gives you room. And if you stop and take half a breath and realize that you have to move fast, you can still move fast. If you move fast right from the start, if speed is your habit and your reflex, you're going to find yourself moving fast in times and places when you eliminate your space to slow down and take a breath. So it really, in terms of mindset, it's about starting first with a frame of reference and a guiding set of principles that allow you to take the time and the breath you need to make good decisions.
And it's not always about just those things. So many times I've been put in positions as a leader, you need to hurry up and make a decision. And so everyone's got as much information as they have, and they're looking at you and waiting for the decision, waiting for me maybe to assess an incredibly complex problem in the next 1 minute while everyone looks at me. And actually, it's not a minute, because if you ever stared at somebody for a minute, that's a very long time. And the other one is not just negative situations, but maybe they're coming to you to take advantage of a good situation. It's going to go away. You're going to need to make a decision now. And it has done me so much good in the past on those occasions when I don't get caught up in the moment as a leader and back away and say, let's take an assessment of the time we have available to make this decision, rather than using our time to make this decision right now. Let's go back and do the first thing. How much time do we have? What is really the impetus behind this decision? Can we take some more time, get some more good minds on it, so we make the best decision also in a good time?
Yep. Timeliness is very much about that, BJ. You're right on the money there. Timeliness is about giving yourself decision space, giving yourself time to ask questions, sort things out. Right now, I'm reading through a book by Ron Chernow's biography, Washington, A Life. And I've read several biographies on George Washington. And, he's a fascinating character and certainly not a perfect leader. He's sort of an icon, and he's lionized in a lot of ways. But Chernow did a really amazing job of digging into Washington as a leader and as a human being. And one of the things that consistently comes out in that book about George Washington is that most of his colleagues and all of those other brilliant thinkers of the day looked at George Washington as someone who was absolutely not an intellectual giant. He read, but he read mainly in agricultural areas. He wanted to be a better farmer. He read history. He read a lot of poetry. It went to a lot of plays, but he wasn't an avid reader of across the spectrum constantly of philosophy and politics and history the way, maybe Adams and Jefferson were. But while his colleagues looked at him and said, he's no genius. And these were, of course, genius level people looking at Washington saying he's our boss and he's no genius. One thing they did commend him on was he was methodical. He gathered information from all perspectives. He asked anybody on his team for his input. In fact, that's one of the concepts that came out of his leadership style was the wheel and hub idea. And Jefferson wrote of Washington that Washington was the hub, and that all of his cabinet members of that initial cabinet during the first government of the United States were the spokes, and that what he did is he'd reach out to all of them, sometimes to their frustration. He would ask everybody the same question about the same topic, and it didn't matter to him whether he was asking Jefferson the foreign secretary or if he was looking towards I think it was Hamilton as the Treasury Secretary. It might not even be a topic that either one of them are interested in or directly responsible for, but he'd ask all of them what their input was. And he would take that time to gather information, to get himself oriented. And Jefferson said about Washington, he was a slow decision maker, but once he made his decision, we knew it was made, we knew it was done, and we knew he was almost immovable in that decision, because he would do it with absolute confidence that he'd taken the time to reach that decision and then give orders or give direction. Now, certainly, there were times, say, Washington wasn't perfect. There were times when maybe he delayed a bit longer than some people were comfortable with on things. On the whole, that fellow was a master of the timeliness principle. He didn't allow himself to be rushed. While sometimes not rushing could have been a fault, maybe he could have or should have gone a little faster at times, as a default setting, he was much more successful concentrating and prioritizing timeliness than I think any colleague or counterpart would have been if they had prioritized speed. You know, go now, it's a crisis. Everything's a crisis. We've got to act now. Washington had that down. And so I jumped off into the what have I been reading lately line of discussion there because that book is on my mind. I've been plowing through it here the last few days. I think I'll bring it back around then now to, you know, the contemporary world. And we're certainly moving at a pace far faster than anything Washington had to deal with. And it is constant. And it can be easy to get sucked into that idea that we have to move now. We have to make decisions now. We have to say something now because somebody else said something. And
if I can throw in here, and I'm just going to kind of tell a story that goes right to what you're talking about. You and I were in Afghanistan and Regional Command Southwest. There I was in my wood planked office with my air conditioner in it, doing paperwork, not as sexy as you might think about. And there's a lot of guys that were doing that. But I was the chief of staff and you were the public engagement guy there. And we had a reporter come in, and you and I spoke to that reporter, and we kind of gave him the once over on what was going on. And he was from the New York Times, if I'm not mistaken. He came in, we gave him the once over, and he went out to the battlefield. We sent him out, and we had all the plans, and we set him up with everything that would ensure his safety. He had someone to talk to. He had his credentials. Everything was set up so that he could go do his job out in the battle space. And to his credit, he came back to us and said, guys, I don't have a very good story to tell here. There's some stuff going wrong up there. Well, truth is, he wasn't telling us anything we don't know. And I say to his credit, because I do give him tons of credit, the article wasn't published. And he looked us in the eye and said, I don't have all good things to say, and here's what I saw. I think we had to agree that, yeah, that's probably what you saw, and it's something we're working on. And then the article came out, and our boss came to you and said, it's a terrible article. What do we do? And I think I'm going to hand it over to you to say what we did do and what you told him and why.
I'm digging through my the dustbin of my memory here, because there were several times that happened. Countless times that kind of thing happened over the course of my career. I tended to be a public affairs guy who, I don't know, just told the story warts and all, and didn't freak out when reporters reported things that most people thought of as negative. And I just looked at and said, yeah, that's accurate. So in this particular case, we had sort of an initial response of, this is a terrible story. What do we do? And the way I framed it to our boss there was, well, what part's inaccurate? You know, is there a part in there that we need to correct? Do we need to, is he wrong? If the facts of the story are correct, then there's nothing for us to do except maybe dig into a discussion out there online somewhere and share more of our own perspective. But if the reporter was accurate, and then he shared a perspective and his own interpretation that was unfavorable to us, reacting to a news story that's negative and then trying to make it positive when it's accurate is a real big problem, and you can rush yourself into that kind of thing. And there was another similar situation where it was New York Times. Not picking on the New York Times here, just a couple of these stories connected, but where an editorial or an op-ed was published by the New York Times, and way out there in Afghanistan, our boss, he called me up. He's like, get Gilmore in here. And he threw that thing on the desk. It was like, this is ridiculous and it's wrong and it's screwed up and it touches on us. And I said, well, what are you thinking? And our boss said, well, I want you to pen a response to this thing, and I'm going to put my name on it. We're going to send it to the New York Times, and we're going to counter this article. I was like, well, I could do that for you, sir. And they'll publish it because you're a 2-star general and you're in theater in Afghanistan, and yay. Yeah. That fills space for them without, of course they're going to publish it. But the article itself is an op-ed. Somebody wrote it, submitted it, the New York Times published it. They're going to publish another one tomorrow by somebody else. It doesn't directly tie into us. And I think we should just let it go. And this was one of those first times when I was building my credibility with our boss, when he looked at me like I was crazy and then said, okay, let's try that. And sure enough, the next day, New York Times wrote a different op-ed, and we didn't do anything. You know, we didn't have to do anything. And the next op-ed was by a different writer on a different topic and a different subject, because the New York Times fills that op-ed space every day. And the end result of that was we kept my boss freed up. We de-stressed him, and we didn't eat up time, you know, my time or his, writing and approving and editing an editorial. We didn't suddenly make responding to that op-ed the number one priority for the day when we had a mission in Afghanistan that we were trying to conduct. And there were, you know, plenty of other things competing for the boss's time. So like I said, you know, if you're focusing on timeliness over speed, it gives you the freedom to be fast if you need to, but it also puts your mind in a space where you're stopping to take a breath and ask yourself, do I gotta? And more times than I can count, the right answer to should I do something is no. And if you don't do it now, odds are you can still do it later. But if you do it now and you create more stress and more tension for yourself, then the thing you just stuck your hands in is very likely going to become the thing that eats your life for a day or 2 days, or perhaps even weeks and months. And oftentimes that's self-inflicted. You know, if somebody else writes an op-ed and you freak out about it and you create a discussion that was never being had in the first place, then there you are, self-inflicted injury. And self-inflicted distraction, and all because of the interest in moving fast instead of being timely.
And Cliff, I would be remiss if I didn't do what I said we were going to do here, which is measure timeliness against the other principles, because they're all relative. As a result of that, doing nothing, if you will, you know, the timeliness, it was not urgent to do something. You had a feel for how the news cycle went, and that 24 hours would buy us right off the top of people's tongues, and they'd be on to the next thing. So an assessment of, we'll call it timeliness, and you could maybe call it something else. In those occasions, what we did gain, though, that people knew that this was, get a feel that this was accurate information. We, as a command, Cliff Gilmore, as a public engagement guy, built up a ton of credibility within a organization or whatever you want to call it, that we relied on a relationship with them to have credibility, so that when they came, they knew we would tell the truth. They knew we wouldn't stand in the way of not a good story, but a true story, and that we were there to discuss those kind of things. So I think when you look at the nine principles, you can look at one, and then you can put it in relation to numerous of the other principles at the same time.
Yeah, and I'll go ahead. We've, you know, I said there are 23 elements of CBL. We aren't going to dig into all of them and flood people's brains right now. But the nine principles have a handy little acronym, two acronyms you can use depending on which one you like. Fat cuspids, or is it fat cuspid, or fat cupids, either one. If you prefer teeth or cherubic, you know, guys with arrows, that's fine. But the quick rundown on the principles, just in order of the acronym, not in order of priority, are free flow of information, accuracy, timeliness, and then you get into cupids or cuspids, credibility, unity, privacy, interaction, and let's see, cupids, I messed up my own acronym, so cupid, we've got to C-U-P-I, interaction, and then D is delegation, and the S, there's actually, it's a sibilant S there, security/safety. And the idea behind these principles isn't that you pick one or that anyone is more important or that you have to do every one of them. The way to work through the principles model is to use it as a checklist, and it's not so important that you apply each one equally, but that you think of each one equally, and then you balance them against each other. So, for example, if you have timeliness and accuracy in play, and notice that, you know, it's timeliness, not speed. You can be fast if you have to, but also if it's the wrong time because you can't be accurate, you may sacrifice a little bit of your free flow of information, and that's a decision-making tool that you can make. And the key to it is, once you've chosen deliberately to sacrifice one principle over another for a bit of time, you have to be able to explain to people why in a way that makes them go, oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense. So, you know, if you're committed to a free flow of information, which we were when we were out in Afghanistan, I built relationships with reporters who knew that I would give them as much information as I could as long as it was accurate. And they knew I was trying to be fast, but that I was more committed to being timely and getting it to them when they would need it, but also when we could be accurate about it. So that principles model becomes a balancing act and a tool that you can use to make decisions rather than a checklist of things you have to do. So if we're saying free flow of information is a principle, we're not saying open the spigot and let information flow constantly, you know, no matter what. And that, incidentally, is why we use free flow of info rather than transparency. Transparency is a wonderful thing. It's excellent. There's all sorts of research and data out there to show that organizations that are more transparent tend to be more credible and therefore more trusted than organizations that are opaque. But also, transparency can't be a default setting. Free flow of information balanced against other decision-making principles like timeliness and accuracy is a principle that you can apply. It's a setting you can look at and say, hey, we want to be free-flowing, but is it the right time and place? Do we have the accurate information? Or is, you know, if we're just flowing freely with info, we may be going fast with inaccurate information, and then it's almost impossible to catch up. And we'll do damage to ourselves and to our reputation and our ability to accomplish our mission by virtue of having been fast and inaccurate in the interest of being free-flowing. So the whole principles model is about balance. It's a checklist to weigh things against each other and an opportunity to say, hey, if there's going to be some give and take, can I explain it? And if you can't explain it, if, for example, you're using security as your excuse not to say stuff, you need to really ask yourself the question, well, if I gave that reason to my mom, would she say, yeah, that makes sense? Or would she look at me with that look? And would my mom look back and be like, Clifford W. Gilmore, you are making excuses. You're using security as an excuse not to talk. You're clamping down on free flow so that you just don't have to say stuff because you think it'll cause trouble. So if you can't explain your decision to sacrifice one principle over another, or flipping it to the positive, if you can't explain your decision to prioritize one principle over the other, then you're going to run yourself into trouble. And again, this I've found is true whether you're deliberately applying the communication-based leadership model or not. You may not even know it's out there. And you may use other tools to make your decisions. But as a consultant, if I come in and I take a look at what's going on and I use Fat Cupids as my analytic framework, I can generally very, very accurately go down that checklist and find the places where one principle is being sacrificed for another in a way that is either it's being used as an excuse to justify clamping down, or you know, security is being used as an excuse to put something in a box. And I can find those opportunities and say, hey, this is why you're having a credibility problem. This is why you're running into a trust problem. You're generally not going to lose somebody's trust because something bad happened. You're going to lose somebody's trust because something bad happened and you're perceived as trying to cover it up. You're perceived as bumbling. You're perceived as incompetent in some way. And so there we have this checklist. You know, I mean, your best solution, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, is to go through the checklist and be sure that you're being free flow. You're free flowing with your info, but you're balancing it against accuracy. You want to be timely rather than fast. And then, of course, moving on down through the rest of them. I won't get into the whole list again here because I'm that's a lot of information for people to put into their brains all in one breathless swoop. So it's probably best for me at this point to take a breath and let BJ talk.
Well, I'm going to bring up another one because we made a different decision this time. And I happened to be at the time in Afghanistan, still the senior guy back. Our boss was up north and he was at a meeting of all the bigwigs. So 4-star generals on down. And Cliff came to my office in quite a huff, said, we have a problem, to say the least. Turns out he was getting reports that the Afghan army was driving the Taliban around in their vehicles in Sangin, which Sangin is, as people have heard, is a bad place, and it can be. And the much dismay of the police, which you can imagine also, they were quite dismayed about that. And Cliff's assessment of the situation at that time was, we've got to say something right now. We've got to get out there, say we know about this. But when it comes to the free flow of information and the accuracy and everything else, that's all we had. We know that this is happening. And the only other answer is, and we're looking into it. What we had to break through, though, was our higher headquarters, your counterparts, Cliff, we're not thinking in that terms of speak. The problem was you knew that the word was leaking out and it was going to get somewhere fast and it was going to become a story because we didn't answer it. So you told me this was incredibly important. Of course, immediately I realized that was you were pretty much right on that, and that we had to do something. And what we did was call the boss. And since he was where he was able to talk to the commanders up there at that level and change the course of what they were going to do. And instead of waiting and seeing what was going to happen and keeping quiet, actually went out with a very overt message to say, we know this is going on. We don't know what's behind it. We need to look into that, but you should know. And I think that probably saved us a lot of at least curiosity out there.
Yeah, that's a good example, BJ, of one of those times when doing the thing I recommended, it didn't save the world. It didn't create a huge victory. It didn't do anything. We can't really measure what the outcome of that was because what we know was we probably prevented something. But of course, if you succeed in preventing something, you don't always know what it is. Right. But what we could anticipate was, the first couple stories that hit the press on this were OMG stories. They were like, holy crap, the Afghan army that the U.S. military and the coalition are training is buddied up with the Taliban. And we were initially in a position of wanting to say, no, it's not happening. And fortunately, that got shut down right away. We said, no, let's confirm accuracy first instead of speeding to the answer of no, it isn't. Another piece of the context of that, though, was that our mission was to turn over authority and responsibility to the local officials. So to the police, to the army, to the government. And the fact that some of the army leaders had made a decision to reach out and sort of extend an olive branch to some of their local Taliban leaders was terrifying. Yeah, don't get me wrong. But also, it was right in keeping with what we had been training them to do. We hadn't been telling them that you need to kill everybody. We've been telling them that you need to build good relationships. Yeah, you need to find solutions, work within your community, build trust within your community. And frankly, in the end of this thing, it was probably more beneficial for the army to have Taliban people with them because Taliban weren't going to kill our Afghan National Army people that had Taliban riding around with them. And it gave the army the sense of where those leaders were and what was going on. And none of this was simple. None of this was black and white, right, wrong, burn the poppy, grow wheat. No, it's just not that simple. But we were able to sort of tamp down that initial reflex. And frankly, I think one of the things we did do, and we can say we did this, was the tone of the initial coverage was OMG, big O, period, big M, period, big G, period, exclamation point, ah! And we reacted to it that way initially. And by getting to our boss who was up there in Kabul and saying, hey, sir, let's work this through a little different, shifting the way we responded to and engaged on this topic, we put the coverage in context. And we can't know exactly what we prevented, but what we did see happen was the OMG went away. And it didn't become the next big, oh gosh, story. It was a day of coverage. And then a bunch of reporters were calling me saying, hey, I read this one article. We're going to write our own. And I said, all right, you're going to do that. Let's confirm that it's happening. And so what we got was the primary article. And then this is the way journalism works very much today. So somebody cracks a story and a bunch of other journalists find that story. And then they're going to write their version of it. That's going to happen. And in this particular case, first story broke, bunch of reporters called us saying, what? And we went back and said, yeah. And they said, oh. And then they wrote their story because they kind of had to write a story because if one newspaper publishes something, then all the other newspaper editors say, where are you? Why aren't you writing about this? So they all met their obligation to write that extra story. All the stories were essentially the same. And within about 24 to 48 hours, the story was told, the story was done, and the OMG effect had totally faded out. And that's, again, good example from the other side where we had to move fast. And the interest of blocking and saying, well, we don't know. We did know. So we don't know would have been an inaccurate thing to say. And, in the prioritizing speed over timely. We're like, oh, we got to hurry up and say we don't know. Well, we would have been translating timeliness into speed and doing it at the sacrifice of accuracy, which ultimately would have chipped away at our credibility and created a bigger problem for us.
And we didn't even, I would say we almost didn't even know a little. So we don't know what it is, but we did admit that we knew it was happening.
Yeah.
And then we would look into it. And that's all we really did. You know, at the accuracy side, that's all we had.
True. Yeah.
You know, I'm going to, in case anybody bores of our staff officer war stories, I'm going to move on. Because you and I, while we were not there, we have discussed this at length and kind of, if you've looked at our website and our blog, you've seen the blog on the Capital One incident. And you and I have surmised and we've talked through that your Capital One, when they had that data breach where over 100 million of their customers' info was made available, was breached into, they had a timeliness issue they had to look into because, they had to figure out how big it was, and you can't do that by saying the sky is falling. At the same time, they had customers who needed to know in a fairly timely manner. Once those customers knew and Capital One could give them information, the customers could become part of your first line defense as they took those actions that you had set up to help stop any breaches from affecting their credit. So Capital One had an incredibly complex timeliness issue to answer when that happened. And since we've talked about it so much, we've delved in and gone, wow, that was a heck of a decision they had to make.
Yeah, I might be reading too much into it, but I'm going to make a pronoun correction there, just in case. So, BJ, you just used the actions that you had told them to do about it, and I want to make sure that nobody out there thinks that we're saying that North of Center or either BJ or I had a direct role in that activity. What we mean in that is sort of in the generic that we were watching Capital One, and we observed that they provided their customers with as much information as they could, as quickly as possible, direct actions that they could take to protect themselves, while Capital One was also digging into, you know, the cyber issues and the security issues back behind what was going on. So rather than waiting to fully understand everything that had happened, they were able to, in a very timely way, tell their clients and customers, hey, we know a thing happened. Here's what you can do about it while we try and sort out the how and the why it happened and take corrective action for that. But anyway, again, I don't know if anybody would have misread that, but I want to be clear that we were not on contract. We were just watching from a case study mindset from the wings.
Case study was going to be the word I used. I should have because I didn't mean to. Just you and I. Reading it in the news and just talking about what we thought about that, especially from that time. And it's one of the conversations we had over several days that what they were challenged with.
Now, as anticipated from our perspective, time flies. Once we get talking, we just enjoy it. And BJ and I can talk like this forever. We've gone about 30 minutes, give or take. And so I'm going to go ahead and tie a bow around this one and wrap up. We told a couple of good war stories. We talked about timeliness as in circumstances when you need to just slow down and take a breath. We've talked about timeliness in circumstances where you have to move fast. And the key takeaway for anybody listening in here, we can, in fact, put a note on the thing, just fast forward the last 30 seconds. The key takeaway for this one is if you prioritize timeliness over speed, you can still be fast. But if you prioritize speed over timeliness, you're going to get out ahead of your skis. You're going to cause grief for yourself. And it's almost always better to at least take a breath and make speed a decision and make it a decision about your timeliness. What's the right time to do and say something rather than, oh my gosh, we got to do or say something now. If you're operating under a principle of speed, you're going to move too fast and the world's going to drag you along with it. If you're operating in a world that moves fast, but with a principle of timeliness, that'll allow you the time to just take a breath. It'll allow you the mindset to realize that you don't have to rush to failure. You can just slow it down just a little bit, ask yourself what you're trying to do, what you're trying to say, and make sure that you do and say it at the right time. And because frankly, you could still fail if you do that. But if you rush to failure, then you're out of options. So give yourself some options and then plan your failure if you're going to do that. But that's my wrap up for today. BJ, any closing words you'd like to throw down?
No, it's great. This is a great first one, and I look forward to doing more.
All right. Hey, thanks for your time. If you enjoyed this episode of Knock Talk, please recommend us to friends and colleagues who may also find these discussions helpful. To learn more about how communication-based leadership can help you navigate successfully in a world that operates at the speed of send, visit our website at www.northofcenter.com. You can also drop us a line anytime with your leadership questions or to recommend future Knock Talk topics at reachknock@northofcenter.com. That's reach, N-O-C, at northofcenter.com. Finally, we want to extend our sincere thanks to Forrest Reed, who produced this episode.